Epilogue. That same busy day, the 15th of Nightall in Dale Reckoning 1486, the year of the Nether Mountain Scrolls, when the boundary of the Faerceris was broken and the dwarves claimed victory in Gontalgrim and Demogorgon entered the Underdark of Faerûn, Brunir Battlehammer stood in front of the throne of the dwarf gods in the upper audience hall of Gontalgrim. In the seat in front of him rested the body of Conorad Braunanvil, 12th king of Mithril Hall.
"Garm me Conorada, Braunanvil Ardraya Kyader Gontalgrim," Brunir said,
thus declaring Conorad as the first king of Gontalgrim, and a great cheer and clanging of tankards together echoed through the great hall.
"And like Conorada come Glormhor," cried Brunir. "Bury Conorad in glory."
No sooner was Conorad taken away than King Emrys Warcrown was helped into the seat by Ragged Dane and Mandarina Dobberbright. The old king rested back comfortably, though his breathing sounded slow and labored.
"Me old friend, ye've earned your spot here," Brunir whispered to him, leaning forward and putting his lips very near Emrys's ear. "I thank ye for letting me give Conorad the place of honor as the first."
"Aye,"
Emrys responded. It seemed like he might want to say more, but clearly he hadn't the strength.
"And now's your turn," Brunir whispered. "You'll rule well."
He started to back off, to formally announce the new king of Gontalgrim, but with sudden and surprising strength, Emrys grabbed him by the collar and tugged him back.
"No,"
Emrys whispered in Brunir's ear.
"Moradin's calling me, me friend. It's time."
Brunir pulled back and stood straight. He wanted to argue, but saw the light already leaving the gray eyes of old Emrys Warcrown.
"Garm me, Emrys Warcrown, Ardraya and Darna Air Gontalgrim,"
Brunir declared as loudly as he could, for he knew that Emrys, dear Emrys, was already slipping far, far away, and he wanted his dear old friend to hear the proclamation that he might carry it proudly to the table of Moradin. Soon after, the shouts echoed throughout the reclaimed dwarven homeland, from the entry cavern to the forge.
"All hail Brunir Battlehammer, third king of Gontalgrim!"
Demogorgon's path of destruction meandered from Sorcerer on Tir Bresh to the exit of the cavern housing Menzo Berenzon, leaving in its wake great piles of rubble, including large sections of more than one drow manor and many dead dark elves, and scores more who had been driven mad by the mere sight of the great and terrible beast. The whole city held its collective breath, for though the march of the Prince of Demons took only a short while, so great echoed the cries, so horrified sounded the calls, that every house huddled down as quietly as possible, not wanting to attract any attention. Accusations would flow soon enough, and fears expressed, and venomous words issued from one house to another, and many toward Baenri. But behind every angry word sounded fear, true and not without cause. How much greater would the consternation and tribulation have been if the drow of Menzo Berenzon saw then the walls of the Faerceris, where more flares of brilliant and powerful light sparked as other demon lords sought to pass the broken boundary. In Ertu's lair in the abyss, the spider queen Lolf purred contentedly. With her rivals soon to be gone, she would find great gains. What had at first seemed garish now resonated as respectful, as the bodies of the two dead kings, both heroically posed, were set on small pedestals behind the throne of the dwarf gods. Conorad and Emrys appeared as they had in life, only now they were entombed in a skin of cooling lava Catti Bree had crafted. The elemental had told her this was the way the dwarves had done it in the early days of the original Gontalgrim, preserving their kings in a coat of black stone. Indeed, following the guidance of the elemental beast, the dwarves dug out long-broken hallways and uncovered a most ancient burial ground, and there found the graves of Gontalgrim's earliest residents. They found no perfect statues like the ones they had just created for Conorad and Emrys, but the top slabs of many of the cairns they did discover were fashioned with a bas-relief of the dwarf entombed within. And so King Brunner ordered that the graveyard be fully opened and demanded proper cairns for every dwarf that had fallen in retaking this ancient Delzoon home.
"He has determined that Thibbledorf Puent will have a statue as well," Gattibri informed Drizzt a few days later.
"A statue akin to Conrad and Emrys and not a simple grave.
The first dwarf to fall in the reclamation of Gontalgrim," Gattibri replied.
"Your pet Primordial will oblige, I expect," Drizzt said with a chuckle.
"My pet?"
Gattibri replied with a sigh, for that, she understood very pointedly, was hardly the case. In fact, she was already beginning to understand that the beast was more eagerly seeking release.
"On the wall opposite the throne," Gattibri explained, "Brunner wants Puent where he can see him when holding court, to draw strength."
Drizzt nodded. It seemed reasonable.
"He's asked Penelope and Kipper to retrieve the body from Long Saddle, that it can be properly interred,"
Gattibri explained, and Drizzt nodded again.
"I am going with them,"
the woman added. And there was more in that declaration than her simple round-trip intentions for Brunner's errand, Drizzt knew. She was telling him, reminding him that she meant to settle there in Long Saddle. Drizzt nodded yet again and smiled, though it was hard for him to do so. He had been beside Brunner for so very long, the idea of leaving now was not an easy thing to absorb. But he would accompany Gattibri, he knew. If not this time, then the next, when she would travel to Long Saddle to make it her home.
"You have time, my love," Gattibri assured him. "We have so very much work to do. I wish to make the reign of my father the king a long one, but that will not be unless—"
Drizzt looked at her curiously.
"The magic is failing," Gattibri said. "The fire beast will find its way out of the pit long before King Brunner is dead of old age."
"You said, unless—"
"There may be a way,"
the woman replied.
"I have much to do."
Among the reconstruction, the further securing of the mines and newly discovered chambers, fortifying the lower levels and sealing off the wild underdark, beside the shouts of gang leaders directing the labor, the first hiss of Gontalgrim's ovens, the first rings of dwarven smithy hammers, King Brunner Battlehammer focused his attention on the throne room to make it his own. He would put the statue of Thibbledorf Puent, the encased mummy of his loyal shield dwarf, up on the wall directly in front of his throne. From that he would draw strength. And so, too, would he draw strength from the grand chair he installed to the right of his throne, the one into which he invited Malebritch's Fellhammer, to great celebration. Greater celebration found the halls of Gontalgrim soon after, when a third grand chair was placed, this time to the left of the throne, and there sat Fist, Tannerbritch's Fellhammer, healed and feisty and ready for battle. "Two queens, eh?" more than one dwarf snickered and winked whenever the subject of that third chair came up in the gossip of the halls. "Ah, but sure and Brunner a lucky-like find that this was the way in the days of old, eh?" one or another would always answer. Brunner didn't care about the jokes or winks or any hint of scandal. He was following the whispers of the dwarf gods. He was following the echoes in his heart. He was Brunner, Brunner Battlehammer, third king of Gontalgrim. He wasn't restless, as he had been in the days of his previous life in Mithril Hall. The road did not call to him, not now at least. This was where he belonged. This, he believed, was why he had been allowed back to Faerûn in a living body.
"You're mad,"
Penelope Harple scoffed when Gattibri outlined the plan to her, Kipper, and surprisingly Jarlaxle, who had shown up in their camp quite unexpectedly, to the Harples at least, on the first night back on the surface above Gontalgrim on the road to Long Saddle. "You do not understand the power with which you are dealing," Kipper chimed in, shaking his head doubtfully.
"I understand that the power is safely contained in the pit, and there I mean to keep it," the woman replied. "I believe he was referring to the other power you mean to involve," Penelope clarified for Kipper. "Few in Faerûn would draw wands against that one."
"I—" Gattibri started. "But I do," Jarlaxle interrupted before she could begin her argument. "There is a way." Catti Bree nodded and motioned for him to continue. "Luskin is my city," Jarl Axel explained, and the Harples seemed a bit taken aback by the bold admission, though of course they had heard the rumors that the Drow were behind the dark powers ruling the city of Sails. "And I know the Archmage well. He cannot return to the Underdark and Menz Oberynzon now, so I expect he will accept my invitation." "And rebuild the Host Tower?" Kipper asked with great skepticism. "We speak of ancient magic here, lost to the world likely." "I speak of an ancient archmage whose bones should long ago have turned to dust," Jarl Axel replied slyly. "And yet here he is. If any wizard short of Elminster himself has a chance, it is Archmage Grumph." Penelope offered Catti Bree a sympathetic look. "It seems a desperate plan."
"It is," the woman admitted. "But what is the alternative? Am I to allow the fire beast to destroy all that my father has reclaimed? And in that eruption, the primordial is surely likely to take tens of thousands of people of the Sword Coast into fiery ruin beside King Brunner."
The Harples exchanged looks. "We will do all that we can to help you," Kipper said. "The libraries of the Ivy Mansion are at your disposal," Penelope added.
"Yours, but not the Drow Wizards," Kipper was quick to say. "Pray keep him far from the borders of Longsaddle.
If the Archmage is in need of any of your tomes, I will come personally for a visit," Jarl Axel assured them with a tip of his great hat and a rather salty wink aimed at Penelope. "And now I must bid you farewell," the Drow mercenary added. "It would seem that I have an Archmage to placate, and that is not as easy a task as you might believe."
"You trust him?" Kipper
asked when Jarl Axel had gone. Catti Bree, staring off into the direction where the mercenary had disappeared, nodded.
"I do, and so does my husband, who knows Jarl Axel well. There are many gears turning where that one is concerned," Penelope warned her, "and not all with your benefit in mind."
"All with Jarl Axel's benefit in mind, though," Kipper agreed.
Catti Bree smiled and turned to face her Harple friends.
"The world is an interesting place," she said.
She left it at that, and held on to her smile, because she understood the darkness that might be ahead, and if she let the smile go, she was terribly afraid that she'd not soon find it again. In a chamber below the lowest levels of the reclaimed dwarven homeland, Grumph Beanry awaited the return of Jarl Axel, and he was surprised indeed when his brother entered beside Matron Mother Xerath Zor-Lauren and Camoriel O'Blodra. Grumph glared at the psionicist balefully, but Camoriel cut him short with a quiet and innocent whisper of, "What did you do?" Grumph cleared his throat. He didn't much like the vulnerability his error had brought upon him, but he had, after all, summoned Demogorgon to the prime material plane. "I thought that King Brunner had changed his mind and would now allow Matron Mother Xerath to leave at this time," the now former Archmage of Menz Oberynzon asked Jarl Axel, quite eager to change the subject.
"You are correct," Xerath answered.
"Brunner professed his desire to speak with Xerath more completely before she was granted her freedom," Jarl Axel replied. "But I thought differently."
"And so you took her," Jarl Axel casually shrugged. "You seem to have many nightcrawlers wriggling about in twisted plans," said Grumph.
"Oh, indeed I do, my brother," Jarl Axel was happy to admit. "There is a broken city, my dearest homeland, in need of my careful caress."
"You speak the part of a fool."
"If we wish to discuss foolish actions," Jarl Axel replied, and let the clear reference to Demogorgon hang in the air. Grump's growl showed that he did not miss the point. "Pray leave us," Jarl Axel bade Xerath and Camoriel, and when they moved into the next chamber, he turned to Grumph.
"If you or that miserable O'Blodron make reference again to the trouble in Sorcerre, I will turn you both into frogs and drop you into a pond of hungry carp."
"Be at ease," Jarl Axel bade him.
There may be good consequences for that strange event if we are clever.
If we are clever, we will move to the other side of the world.
Jarlaxle scoffed at the notion. You think this is ended, brother? He asked. It has only just begun.
You intend to go against the matron mothers?
Grumph asked, incredulous. Jarlaxle didn't answer, but neither did he blink.
Then you should bring them Driz Doerden's head to lift your station before you ultimately deceive them.
Dear brother, I will bring them more than Driz's head, Jarlaxle promised. I will bring them Driz.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Archmage, Legend of Drizzt, Homecoming, Book 1. Written by R.A. Salvatore, performed by Victor Bavine. Producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2015 by Wizards of the Coast, LLC. Production copyright 2015 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.